Coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.
Your advancement is going to come by your knowledge set, your skill base, whatever you want to call it. That's how you're going to get to where you want to go.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches podcast, we're joined by Brandon Bailey, assistant coach at DePaul University. Coach Bailey has built an impressive career with coaching stops at DePaul, the Boston Celtics organization, Ohio State, and now back at DePaul, while also serving as the head coach of the Maine Red Claws in the NBA G League. His experience across both the professional and college levels gives him a unique perspective on leadership, player development, and staff dynamics. In this episode, we discuss what it was like transitioning from a G League head coach back into an assistant role at the college level, what lessons he would take back if he had the chance to do his time as a head coach over again, and how assistants can effectively contribute their ideas and have their voice heard while still supporting the vision of the head coach.
What's up, coaches? Welcome back to Rising Coaches Podcast here, Doug and Alan. We're excited to be joined alongside the assistant coach, DePaul University, ladies and gentlemen, Coach Brandon Bailey. Coach Bailey, thanks for hopping on. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You got it, man. Thank you.
Excited to be able to have you on, talk a little bit. I know you have a rich history, a lot of things. We basically got into a conversation before we hopped on here. Of course, selfishly, I had to bring it up about Go Buckeyes, of where you previously were. But I know you've had some great experiences. Looking back on your career, you started as a manager. Obviously, you've known of the coaching profession way before because you had a family. And your father, being a legendary coach himself, Mike Bailey, you've been groomed and born around it. And this is something that's probably, I'm assuming, in your blood and what you've been around your whole life. But you've been starting, going back to your first positions and where it started, at least for your career. The DePaul women's team, I know you're with head coach Doug Bruno at the time, transition into a GA, Dobo, going into the men's team, and then ultimately getting to where you are now. You've even had some head coaching experience, which is great. But a common question that we hear, and this is something that I wanted to make sure to bring up, because as we mentioned, you started in the women's side and now working in the men's side. The transition from women's to men's or vice versa. I feel like that is something that a lot of people talk about. This is early in your career, so maybe it wasn't as difficult, but did you find it difficult? Was it different to work from one side to the other, making that change?
Yeah, I'd say it's what you said. It was so early in my career, or if you want to call it that at that point. I was just trying to impact the team as best I could, help them win as best I could with the role that I had. I think the biggest thing that really impacted me was just their culture of winning there, especially then at that time. I forget exactly what the number was, but they had a huge string of NCAA tournament appearances. While I was there, we made the first Sweet 16 in the program's history. So just that competitive spirit, that winning attitude, I think is one of the biggest things that impacted me overall. They had great players there, Kyra Smith, Allie Quigley, just to name a couple. And then the coaches. Coach Bruno is one of the, if not the best teacher on that side, dating back to obviously late 80s, stuff like that. But his camps are world renowned as well. I feel like a lot of the way I teach and coach, the style of which I teach and coach, a lot of that comes from him. So yeah, I would say those are the two biggest things that I took from that experience with that staff and with that program.
Did you find this true, Brandon? I was fortunate enough to work at the University of Texas for a year with Karen Aston on the women's side. And I had a coach give me some great advice before I did it because I was just picking his brain. And he gave me a great quote. He said, women need to feel good in order to play well. And men typically need to play well in order to feel good. And it was more of a psychological thing, meaning if ladies feel clear and there's nothing obstructing them mentally, they can really let it rip and really be in the flow. Versus guys can have a lot going on if they go out and get 16 and 8. Then it's, hey, no big deal. Where's my phone? Where are we going? That type of thing. Did you find that to be true as well?
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not true. Again, I was just, that's not really what my role was at that time. I was really just trying to, the way I was impacting winning was making sure the drills were run smoothly from drill to drill with different things that coach needed, you know what I mean? Or making sure coach had the film that he needed exactly on time and not messed up or whatever. That wasn't exactly what my mindset was like, you know what I mean, at that time. I was trying to, number one, do a good job at what I was doing. And also just learning from those guys, learning from Doug Bruno, Maggie Dixon, Sam Williams, Nikki Haysford, Bart Brooks, Candace Blankson, just to name a few, like Allison Guth. Like, how do I learn from those great coaches that have gone on to either be great assistants or great head coaches on their own? And how can I apply that to myself? So I found that there was a lot of similarities in those coaching styles to what was successful here on the level that I'm at right now. And even in the NBA, when I was in the NBA for 12, 13 years, that was kind of my mindset overall during that time.
So you mentioned a lot of those coaches have similarities. What were maybe some of the similarities that stood out to you that you feel good or successful programs have that you've seen so far in your career?
Yeah, I think I've been really blessed to work for a lot of really good coaches. Like we mentioned earlier, Doug Bruno, Jerry Wainwright, Oliver Purnell, Doc Rivers, Brad Stevens, Chris Holtman, Dwayne Casey, but I can go on and on about the assistant coaches that I've worked with. I'd say the biggest things that, in my opinion, make the most successful coaches is emotional awareness, emotional IQ. That's number one. Can you develop great relationships with your players? Because it doesn't really matter, in my opinion, what I know as much as like how can I impact them, let them know that I care so that I can get the most out of them from a playing standpoint. Preparation and teaching. Brad, Doug, Coach Holtman, especially, like those guys are great teachers. Great teachers. They have a great way about them of taking something that may be super complicated or may be perceived as super complicated and making it super simple from a teaching standpoint so that it's executable and doable on the court. I'd say those three traits are something I really try to take for myself and apply it to where I'm at right now.
No, I'm glad you said that about teaching. I think Dan Campbell, I don't know if you saw on IG, he had a pretty cool quote because he was talking to John Harbaugh. And one of the things he talked about was being a teacher. And I think he had said his mom was like a third grade teacher or mother or grandma. But I think that is as important now in coaching as much as anything, because you don't have as much time. You guys are dealing with it at your place. Your crew's rolling in here pretty soon. Next week, yeah. And then that 9-month clock is ticking.
And absolutely. So, that's like a big thing. You don't have as much time as you really think anymore. Like last year, we had, I think, 4 or 5 returners, and we felt that impact on our team. Just the carryover, they were advocates for us, advocates for the program. We weren't really necessarily starting from scratch with a lot of things, especially defensively. That's the area of the ball that I focus on. I can't imagine what it would be like having 4-year guys could really start to do and execute and do some things and really impact people emotionally and socially as well. It is different. You got to overload them quickly, like right away. And I feel like the best teachers are the ones that are going to make the biggest impacts moving forward.
Man, that's the worst part too, is having to say, I can only imagine having 4 years. Like nothing irritated me more than when I go on social media and you see some kid posted, I'm coming back. And it's like, why is that so glorified? Like you should be excited to be able to be. And now, granted, I understand that coaches do that, players do that. Like I know that's the landscape now, but it's different. It's different.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got the commitment post, and you have the recommitment post.
Yeah. So it's like multiple. Interesting. Interesting. Yeah.
I know I mentioned lately, and I feel like at least it's good to cover too, but you've had an experience being able to grow up under, as we mentioned, your father, Mike Bailey. He's a legendary coach. He's had a great career so far. I know we've got to at least – I didn't necessarily get to meet him, but we got to see him, as Alan mentioned, when we were out in Indianapolis. Just some of the things that maybe you took or instill from him that you've learned over the years. Or maybe some of them might even just be you don't even realize you've learned them because you've been around it so much. I feel like that can happen. But what are some things that maybe you took from your father that you utilize?
Oh man, how long is this podcast? How long is that going?
Make it a two-piecer if we need to.
Yeah. I've had a lot of coaches that have impacted me in my career. We mentioned some already. Obviously, none of them have impacted me more than him. Just being with him day to day growing up, But then also growing up, he wasn't around as much. We lived out in the suburbs and he was working in the city. So like outside of maybe summers where I'd be with him at camps all the time, we didn't see each other as much because he'd be going early in the morning to go maybe pick up a couple kids on his way to school to make sure they get there on time. And then he'd be there for freshman practice, sophomore practice, and then varsity, and then, or maybe he would be out scouting somewhere, like scouting an opponent. So there'd be times when he wouldn't get back till 7, 8, or 9 at night, which didn't leave me much time to be with him. So that time that I spent with him playing for him was totally invaluable. Obviously, just we're talking about my career right now, but just our relationship as a whole, literally driving with him to school every single day, driving to and from. I made a point to have lunches with him as much as possible when he wasn't out recruiting, just to spend extra time with him and be with him. Pinpoint one or two things that I really took from him is difficult. I think my work ethic, my love of getting better comes from him. He's always trying to learn and get better at the game of basketball. He's in his 70s right now, and he still goes to more clinics, watches more instructional videos, watches more games than anybody that I've ever been around. And we'll have these round tables here in the fall for high school coaches in the area, and he comes to them, and you can argue that he's coming home because I'm working them or he's showing support to his son or whatever. But that's not really, that's part of it, but that's not as much of the story. He would be at that stuff anyways. And then I'll go back there and sit with him after I'm done with my deal and somebody, one of our other coaches is talking. And he's got 4 or 5 pages of notes. And I'm like, Dad, what, like, you know all this stuff. What are you doing? But like, if he thinks that there's something that can impact him or impact his team, he's going to seek that out and try to get better. I think it's rare that he does his 1-3-1 defense. That's something that's pretty consistent. He does his dribble drive motion offense. I think that's something that's pretty consistent. But he's not just sticking with that every single year. He's trying to find different ways to tinker with it to make it better based on maybe his personnel or the teams that are in his sectional, his conference, whatever. That's something that I really obviously respect. And it's really been ingrained in me that you got to get better every single year and you can't stay stagnant. He would always say something like, as soon as you're like, feel like you've got it all figured out, you need to stop doing it. You need to stop coaching. If you feel like you don't need to get better anymore or whatever that is, you need to stop. Just that continuing striving of improvement and getting better is something that I've really, really grabbed onto and held onto. And I'm trying my best to instill it in his grandkids right now. See how much that holds. We'll see how much that holds.
And I want to say too, for everybody out there listening, if any of you are young coaches and just heard a man who's in his 70s and he's still trying to get better, oh. If people out there think I don't have to go to camps and clinics because I have an idea, I have social media, that's just
unreal.
Put the icing on the cake right there. Yeah. I feel like people think they get it from social media.
Yes, some people may not know him because he's a Chicagoland area coach. He's won like 700 plus games or something crazy like that. I'm like, I'm never ever gonna sniff that number ever in my life. He's very good at what he does. Very good.
Yeah, and he'd be the last to bring up that number. Just in I've known him, you described, if there's a phrase in the dictionary called coach's coach, yes, just put your dad's picture next to that definition, because that that is a coach's coach, man. And then, yes. And just case in point, I was fortunate enough to speak at the Illinois State High School Coaches Clinic last year, and Ryan Peden went right after me. But I get done speaking, and the first guy to come up and shake my hand, Coach Mike Bailey. He's sitting up in the stands, and he just walks right down. Hey, how you doing? But no, that thirst for learning, I think that's huge in this profession, because I think there's a thirst for advancement in our profession.
Yes.
I don't know that always the thirst for learning matches the thirst for advancement.
Yeah.
I think that's a big one that young coaches need to pull from this. That's why I'm glad you said that.
Yeah. I think it should be the opposite. Like you're saying, it should be the opposite way. Your advancement is going to come by your knowledge set, your skill base, whatever you want to call it. That's how you're going to get to where you want to go. I've never tried to seek out jobs or put my name out there for certain things or self-promote as much. It's been more so like, all right, how do I impact the team that I'm on? How do I add value to my head coach or the players that I'm working with as best as possible? And hopefully that's going to lead to something later on down the line. As long as you're taking care of those people, everything's going to take care of itself.
No doubt.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And to that point, as you mentioned, you've had some great coaches that you've worked for. Obviously, you've had a good stint with DePaul, which has brought you, if you would have burned a bridge, you wouldn't be able to be back to DePaul where you are now. I know that's where ultimately where it started and being there again. So helping and supporting the people around you definitely has been something that has helped you at least get back to here, also knowing the people around you. But the great thing to point out, too, is you've had some head coaching experience. I know, as you mentioned, with the Maine Red Claws, with the Boston Celtics G League or D League team. So talk about just like your head coaching experience, the time there, your first time, me and Mage. I know Mage has had some head coaching experience. I have not been fortunate to have it yet, but everybody always says, and we always have one question, and I feel like people can write a book on their answers. Just your first year as a head coach, you look back, maybe what's a thing that you feel like you could have done differently or something that you didn't realize was this difficult until you actually got into it?
Yeah, that's a great question. Again, like we could do a whole podcast on this, a two-parter on this. I was not a great head coach in my time there at Maine. I went from being a video coordinator, doing defensive scouts for the Celtics, to then being in that head seat. And like you said, like you don't really know what you don't know until you're in that position. I think I tried too much to be somebody maybe that I was not. I was trying to be too much like Coach Stevens and not enough like myself a lot of times. I felt I had a lot of great assistants, like a lot of great assistants that went on to do a lot of really good things post-Maine. And I did not lean on them enough. When things got difficult, instead of delegating more, I like pulled everything in internally and tried to do it all myself. So not only was I trying to be a head coach, like a manager of the players, the game, but I was also trying to do every defensive scout, every offensive scout, do every single drill and practice, didn't take many suggestions from that standpoint for that's game planning or practice. I ran some player development workouts. I can go on and on. I just did too much. I felt like I should have done more of obviously delegating, but been more of like a servant leader to our coaching staff and been more of a manager of the game as a whole. I felt like if I had done that, would have it end up differently? I don't know, but I at least would have felt maybe a little bit better about it from a development standpoint for both myself, the players, and our coaches. I think that's probably the biggest thing taking away from it that I would have changed. I was a, whatever this means, but I was a head coach for one of the NBA combine teams. And again, it's on a much, much smaller scale. And it's only for 2 or 3 days or however long it was. But I tried to take that mindset. I was like, okay, this may be one of the only times I'm ever a head coach again. So I'm just going to try this out. And I try to do more of that servant leader type thing, giving people certain roles, laid out exactly what I wanted them to do. And then like, okay, how can I help you with this? What do you need? Do you have everything that you need to get this done? Logistically, do we have everything from a timing standpoint? Whatever it was. And I felt a lot better about that because then it freed me up to just coach the actual game. And I felt much more organized from that standpoint and was able to do a much better job there. So again, there's a lot of other things I probably could have done a lot differently. I think what I was really proud of was the staff that we hired, the players that we had that went on to do good things as well professionally, just their development overall. But just from a personal standpoint, I felt like I just should have delegated a little bit more and been more of that servant leader that honestly that Coach Stevens is. I wanted to be like him so badly that I almost felt like I went away from him a little bit too much too. That's to me what makes him so good. He's great. He's one of the most prepared people I've ever been around, but he's really that servant leader that really makes sure that he gets the most out of everybody as much as possible. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
No, that's
phenomenal. phenomenal transparency. It's phenomenal. That's
yeah.
Sorry, Doug, to interrupt, but I just I had to say that just because I made some of those same mistakes, you know, especially in my first year.
Yeah.
And you don't know that you are when you're doing it, right? And then
right.
Thankfully, by year three, I had learned to get out of the way. And ironically, that was our best season. But guys, yeah. What I think what's great about what you said for those who want to be head coaches or young coaches in their first, second year, maybe just got their job this spring, as you listen to this, is what you said there is delegate, and not just delegate, but again, delegate with clarity.
Yes.
Yeah. And if you figure out how you can help everyone around you,
right,
they're going to help. You're going to get helped by default.
Right.
Because if they're doing well, then you're going to be in good shape just by default.
And that's what I feel like Coach Holtman does a really good job of as well here at DePaul. We have a lot of former head coaches on our staff. And number one, I think it says a lot about him that all of us want to work for him. But also he does a good job of managing the program overall and laying out exactly what he wants to us as a staff. And we have exact clarity on everything that we need to do. And then he kind of, I wouldn't say he gets out of the way because we're still executing everything that he wants, but he lets you, once he's kind of laid out exactly your job description, what he needs you to do on a day-to-day basis, he kind of lets you have at it and roam free with it a little bit. Now, if he wants to reel something in, he'll do that, but he does, like, he's a great, obviously, coach, but a great leader from that standpoint.
Yeah. Ultimately, assistants need reps, right? We say this out here all the time, Doug and I, but practicing just for players, you know,
right.
coaches need practice coaching.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Those reps are as important as the guys on the floor that need their rep. Your staff needs reps also.
No doubt. Absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, I remember, man, if you would have saw me on some of my first scouts that I gave years ago, it's like, I didn't know what to say. You're sitting there, oh, geez, I have no. And now it's a lot more fluent. I've had one of my players for my first year that I started here. I've been here 4 years. They're like, you could tell you've definitely progressed with this. And I'm like, it's obvious. Thanks for giving me my, you know, my backings, but it's, which means it was obvious that I was struggling.
No,
to your point, you need the reps. You need to be able to do it in. To find those coaches that actually give you the chance, even when you're struggling, they throw you out there and no, you're going to figure it out. You got it. Those are the great, that's how you learn. Those are great opportunities.
I don't know, see if you agree with this too, Brandon, but like, it's important that your players know that you have confidence in your staff.
Yes.
That they need to feel that confidence that you have, that I could say to Orlando Vandross, okay, oh, you got this shell segment for 15 minutes. Let's try to hit this and this, and then you give him the paintbrush. Then I'd go be an assistant for 15 minutes, head coach, and I'm able to hit more guys than I would if I were out in front.
That's something that Coach Rivers did my first couple of years in Boston. I wasn't around for Coach Thibodeau or Coach Frank, but he had coordinators, offense and defensive coordinators, and especially defensively. Once the defensive coach started to go, Mike Longobardi, he would kind of back off and not say as much. He would come in and interject sometimes, but there were times when he would leave the court and go do something else for a couple, just send that message like, hey, no, he's got it. This is his thing. This is his voice. He's going to execute what I want, but this is his voice right now. So, yeah, I don't know if necessarily I would leave the court. That's a lot of confidence in guys. But, yeah, no, I think that's extremely important to empower your assistants. And that's something I definitely need to change if I ever get an opportunity again. That's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, he's probably thinking we got 82 of these plus potential playoffs. So let me conserve the voice here a little bit.
Right. And right.
Even if they don't even see me for 10 minutes, that's fine. But that's a long haul at that level in terms of using your bullets with your voice.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, absolutely.
The one thing I want to shed light on, too, that you mentioned earlier is a lot of your staff are head coaches, as you mentioned. Now, from the people we've talked with, and at least from what I've learned from hearing from people, is some head coaches don't want that because they don't want to be overempowered. Those are the people who maybe, like, they want people who aren't as intelligent. Now, I feel like at the higher ranks where you're at, and obviously Coach Holtman, he wants those people who are going to probably going to challenge him, be able to bring new ideas. And so with that being said, you're an assistant, right? You were a head coach. You step back into an assistant role. Was that step back difficult? And then it's a two-part question. Going from a head to assistant, was it difficult? And then having all those previous head coaches in one room, how is it working with everybody and challenging everybody with so many different ideas floating around?
Yeah, first part of your question. So it wasn't that difficult for me the first time, or the time going from Maine to Boston, because I had already worked on that staff before and just fell back into that original role that I had. And it was a place that I really love to be anyways. I love that staff, obviously love working for Coach Stevens, and the players and things like that. But I think the biggest thing that I tried to do going from Maine to Boston was, again, it was on an extremely smaller level from the G League to the NBA, but I recognized a little bit more of like exactly what's on his plate on a day-to-day basis, even if it was on a smaller scale. So I was like, okay, what can I do to take something off of his plate? So I would just try to have the role that he would give me, but then within that role, okay, what can I kind of take off of his plate, create things for myself to do, kind of always stay busy, something, maybe notice something that maybe challenging for him to accomplish as a head coach at that time, and try to take that on myself, just try to add value to him that way, if that makes any sense. Felt like I accomplished that a little bit, but would still try to find different ways that I could accomplish that even here today with DePaul. As far as like all the head coaches on our staff, I think number one, coach does a good job of vetting his staff before he hires them. And he's not going to hire guys that are about themselves and are just out to try to get another head coaching job or kind of be in the spotlight, self-promote, things like that. So I think we're all on the same page on what we need to accomplish here, or what we're trying to accomplish here rather. And we're all on the same page on what our roles are, and we're not trying to overstep anybody's bounds or anything like that. We all have great guys on the staff, led with Jack Owens, Brian Mullins, Paris Barham, Laval, and myself, Laval Jordan and myself. We've grown really close the last 2+ years now. And yeah, I wouldn't say that there's been a few times maybe where we've like brought different ideas to the table. But at the end of the day, again, like Holt does a good job of centering us, getting us all on the same page. And I think because we've all been head coaches, we know, okay, like he's the head coach and we have to execute what he wants, even if it's maybe something different that we've done in the past. And we're never like going into a situation where we're like, there's some animosity or something like that about what we're doing. We're all on the same page on what we need to accomplish because of Coach Holtman, and we go out there and do it. I think it's almost, I think it's because of the quality of people that we have on the staff that Coach has hired because of the vetting, that hasn't been a problem for us. I'm not saying it never is. I'm sure it is a lot, but we have great quality people on our staff that are great teammates, and it hasn't been an issue for us at all. So,
yeah. No, I'm glad you said that, because if there's one thing when you're a head coach that you really, if you could say, if I had to get one thing right as a head coach before running anything offensively, defensively, before organizing my summer, before what I do campus wise, what I got to do in the community, fundraising, relationship with my AD, all the things on the laundry list of head coaching stuff, getting the staff right is absolutely crucial. Because, and I love that you said that, because the character of the people are going to determine the quality of the room.
Just
like your locker room, the character of your people that you bring in is going to determine the quality of the locker room. Same thing with staff. The character of the guys you bring in are going to determine the quality of the meeting room. And if anything, being a head coach makes you even more empathetic and less my way, because you've had to kind of run these meetings and understand that you had different guys that, are you going to debate? Yeah. Are you going to clash at times? Yeah. But the idea of like, when we leave the room, let's go make it work. Let's go make it work together. And I think when you've been a head coach, it actually makes you more empathetic and less fighting for your own flag stick in the ground. And because you understand what the guy at the end of the table is going through, and that And by the time you leave that room and you step to the floor, the players are going to feel either this unification or they're going to feel the division. One of the two. When it actually comes time to get to work collectively together, they're going to feel the tone of whatever was set in that meeting room. That's another reason why that's such a big deal.
And I've been on staffs that wasn't the case, mm-hmm. where we weren't on the same page. Mm-hmm. And you could feel it. You could feel it on the court. The players could feel it. And I like that really impacted, obviously, our play in the games. And I feel like as much as I've learned from those good moments that I've had with the good staffs that I've worked with, I've learned just as much from that stuff as well and taking that to where we're at here. So the coach is great, too. You present him with something, and it's something that you really believe in, and you have evidence to back it up. He's going to roll with you and what you want if you have a strong conviction in it as well. Yeah, I can go on and on about Coach Holtman. That's a big part of it.
Yeah, that's it.
No, I completely agree. Like the divide between coaches, and especially I feel like more than enough times, at least from the experiences that I've had, you'll have complete disagreements. As the assistant or talking to the head coach, you're like, I don't like this. I don't think this is going to work. But that's behind closed doors. And as soon as you leave those closed doors, if you're not in unity and you're not saying the same thing, exactly like you guys are saying, it's going to be a different message and everybody else is going to feel it. But
right.
You got to be able to have the people you can trust and respect behind those closed doors, that whatever those conversations are, don't leave that room.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, that's awesome. I guess one thing to want to ask about, too, is just the recruiting landscape now with obviously the portal and how everything has completely changed. First off, a lot of us know the answer, but just to hear your perspective, like how has the dynamic and the thought process of trying to bring somebody in changed from when you initially started? We'll say maybe understand you weren't maybe necessarily doing as much recruiting on the manager side, but being around the game, probably hearing it from other people to now what it is now, how has all of that changed?
Yeah, so full transparency. So I don't do any of our recruiting here, honestly. I just focus on our defense. I'm our defensive coordinator. I think the things that I will say, just like viewing our guys, the guys that are lead recruiters, Jack Owens, Brian Mullins, Paris Barham, there may be a few things that have changed, obviously, in terms of the NIL stuff, but it's still about the relationships that you build, whether it's with AAU coaches, the players that you're trying to recruit, obviously, but now you're adding in the agent component. That's been big for us here at DePaul, is like building that strong relationship with guys you can trust from an agent standpoint. And our guys have done a really good job with that. There's a ton of agents out there right now that deal with this stuff. And to have guys that you can go to, that there's mutual trust between the two parties, that, you know, you're going to get things done the right way, I think is huge. And we've gone about it with, I feel like, a lot of the right people. Again, I can't speak to like personally doing that stuff, but like just from an observation standpoint with the guys that do a great job for us here, to me, that's the biggest thing, that why we had success this spring was that relationship component there. So whether that's like overseas agents, the guys here that are in the States, whatever that is, it's, to me, it's the same thing, like with AAU coaches or high school coaches. But now you're just adding in the agent component and there's just money attached to it as well, obviously. But like, it's still about relationships and building that trust that you guys have together. You're going to, number one, take care of their players from a basketball standpoint, get them better, produce a winning product, and also develop them as people. And then obviously you're adding the money component to that as well.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you said that. We actually had a round table out here with Oliver Winterbone and Gordon just recently. And those two, we asked them one question, is what's the biggest mistake in this landscape now that agents make? And they both hit on the guys that don't tell the truth, which gets back to what you just said about trust. So I'm glad you said that, because again, it's another layer of a person that you're dealing with, but the things you need information wise in terms of helping that flow, that's still the same. So again, there was a time where it was way, way back, just the high school coach. Then AAU coaches kind of jumped into it. Then sometimes now the player development guys are sometimes in that circle.
Yeah.
And now the agent. So there's just more layers to it. There's more layers in the cake. But if trust is the conduit that flows through all those relationships, and transparency and being on the same page and, hey, let's limit our surprises here. I think that's the best way to operate. But it's funny. I'm glad you said that because those guys echoed the same thing that, you know, especially with the agent perspective now more than ever, getting to the truth quickly is a big deal.
Yeah. And they're not trying to waste time.
Yeah, they're very absolutely.
Trying to get to the bottom line, like what it is. And that stuff's really important.
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, no doubt. No, Coach Bailey, first off, thank you for, again, I know this is every time. There's really no downtime anymore in the season, especially with everything going on. So to be able to take a couple minutes, thank you very much for hopping on here. I know we truly appreciate it, but obviously the people who are listening do as well.
No, I appreciate it. Again, like my dad's a high school coach. I would always go with him to practices, obviously, but like clinics, listen to audiobooks, podcasts at that time, whatever it is. So anytime I have an opportunity to do this stuff, I always try to take advantage of it. And I really appreciate it. I was actually at the first ever Rising Coaches Clinic back in the day. So this is a pretty cool thing for me as well. Yeah, I appreciate it. You guys having me on.
Thank you, man. This was great. This was great. And again, I'm going to say it once more. Probably not since Jeff Capel was out here have we had a head coach or someone that's been a head coach share the transparency that you did.
And
I'm saying that in that we appreciate it. And our profession can't have that enough in an age of where we post all the good stuff and we put our lives online like this snapshot that it's always that way. And knowing damn well for sure it's not always that way.
No.
And so for you to share the trend, at least share your challenges that you fought as a head coach and how that's made you better and how you will be better the next time around. We appreciate that because that, again, people can't get that everywhere. You can get actions everywhere. Again, pistol, ghost, flare, slip, you can get that everywhere, but you can't get that level of transparency everywhere. And that's what we try to maybe distinguish ourselves a little bit and make that unique. And let people share from the heart. And hopefully people feel that separates our pod a little bit from some of the others is that you just don't hear that everywhere. And especially now in this day and age. So that means a lot that you said that, man. Thank you.
No, listen, like you're not going to get better by lying to yourself. I've done a lot of since that opportunity and it was a great opportunity. It is a pressure cooker type deal. You're dealing with, you're managing up. Like with management and you're managing down with your staff and the players. I went from running a video room and having maybe like 25 games in for scouting to having every single game and managing practices, games, players, work, all that stuff. But then you could be preparing for a game and one of your players gets called up and now a game plan has changed. Maybe your opponent has a couple assignments and now you don't really find out about that till a couple hours before. And now your whole rotations change or your scout changes on the fly. You know what I mean? So it was such a great opportunity. I definitely would not be talking to you guys without that experience. It's led to a lot of great things for me, but I'm not going to get another opportunity or I'm not going to be good at it, especially if I get another opportunity, if I lie to myself about that experience either. You're always constantly trying to improve and get better. And I do think it's important to share that as well, because you're right. It's not always sunshine and roses and all that stuff. You know what I mean? You got to be self-critical. You got to find ways to coach yourself and self-evaluate and get better constantly. Whether that's you as an assistant coach or a head coach, like my dad does, like you always got to be tinkering, just finding ways to get better, just to move forward and be better in the future.
No, love it, man. We love it. And please tell your dad hello for us as well.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Yeah, I will. Thank you.
No, thank you again for sharing everything that you have. And yeah, like Al said, the transparency is amazing. That definitely, it gives people at least somewhat of an idea so they can have more of an understanding because people don't know what they don't know and they haven't had those experiences. At least you have. So thank you.
Yeah, sure.
But for everybody out there, another episode of the Rising Coaches podcast. That does it for us, your hosts, Alan Major, Doug Caputo. Coaches, we always say it, keep working and keep rising, coaches. We'll see you soon. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com.
Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.
Still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.